This is Bump and Stacey
on Seattle Sports.
Streaming through the Seattle Sports app and at seattlesports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Michael Bumpus and Stacey Ross.
Here we go now.
Curtis Rogers in for Michael Bumpus today. Curtis and I joined now by Mariners insider Shannon Dreher on the Emerald Queen Casino Sportsbook Hotline. Hey, Shannon, how's it going?
It's going. We are safe inside. We're not in the flood. I've had to point that out to everybody who's asked. Everything is fine.
Not in the flood? Is it like, what's the weather like out there? What's going on?
Well, it's fine right now, but they have kind of a flood event, if you will, going on the outskirts. Well, the morning show was all over this and concerned about me. You guys, apparently not so much.
Shannon, I've been really focused on the zebra in North Bend, okay?
Yeah, okay.
I've had a lot on my mind. And obviously, I care about you guys. You know, I hope you guys build a boat, take animals two by two. Like, I want all those things. I just didn't know there was a flood in Houston is all.
Well, Stacey, admit it. You have been out in your zebra costume.
And trying to catch
downtime,
it.
Trying to... I mean, it's the best way to catch one, right? Just
everyone
act like
knows
one.
That.
Yeah,
you got territory. You've been roaming around North Bend in your zebra costume.
Shannon, stop outing me like this.
Well, now that we've gotten to the bottom of that.
That you're okay is
what
we mean.
Exactly. Shannon, big opportunity for the Mariners to throw even more dirt on this Astros team this weekend, three-game series coming up. When you look at this series, where are the opportunities for the Mariners to get a couple over on this Astros team?
Well, you know, one thing, I look at this Astros team, and to me, they can break out of it at just about any time. And you don't want it to be, well, the Mariners are here. Yeah, they're down right now, and yeah, they've had struggles because of injuries, but they do have players coming back. They still have some pretty potent offensive players on this team. So you don't overlook anything regarding what their record is right now, regardless of what their record is right now. They're still the Astros. They still have a lot of talent, and they still know how to win. That said, they seem to be kind of running around in circles a little bit right now. So you do hope you can take advantage. I think, you know, obviously your best opportunity is going to be on your last day. There was some thought that you might get Garcia. You're getting Hunter Brown instead, which is good. It'll be Bryce Miller on the hill. You are throwing Kirby, Gilbert, and Miller at them in the three-day stretch. And, you know, there's opportunity written all over that because of that. And, you know, they've had recent success here. So I think that is something that helps. But you do have a tough pitching matchup tonight. Kirby and Ronel Blanco could be a very good, you know, it could be another pitcher's duel. And we've seen some of those in the recent week. Valdez has had some injury problems. And he's been hot or cold. He is either on or he is off. And there have been times when the Mariners have really had his number. So you hope that this is one of those times. And there's some confidence because he is somebody that they've seen quite a bit. So, you know, you look at this, and I don't really look at it as, you know, you're taking on the last place Astros right now. Mm-hmm. I still kind of look at them as what they can be.
Yeah, Altuve OPSing over 1,000. We talked about, he and not Bregman combining for like 15 home runs. Who was it?
Kyle Tucker. Still on this team too.
Just unreal. Curtis brought up an interesting point about Josh Rojas, which is he's been absolutely amazing and kind of underrated, and we aren't giving him enough credit, but almost exclusively against righties. He's only got 6 ABs against lefties. They're facing a lefty on Saturday in Framber Valdez. Do you see this team as just sticking with, like, look, we know where Josh is good, or do you think they should or might give him some more at-bats against lefties?
Well, they haven't done it as of yet, and I don't think they will do it on Saturday. And I think that one of the reasons why you have to, we've talked about this, you know, with different players throughout the years, but sometimes they have those numbers because you are setting them up for success. I don't know if Josh Rojas can hit lefties the way he does. I do know that you have another player on this roster that you are depending on for the entire season that, you know, your plan is to platoon in that position. And the bottom line is I don't know that I would change anything. You were talking about right now, their offensive numbers at third base are top 3 in baseball. So I think maybe if you're thinking, well, let's try it against the lefties, maybe you're getting a little bit greedy there right now. And maybe if all other aspects of your offense was working, or at least about 75% of your offense was working, I would do that. But they're kind of in a delicate state of trying to get this offense where it needs to be. So I think I would probably stick with what is working and what has, you know, honestly been your best spot in the diamond as far as production goes, as offensive production goes. I don't think I would mess with that right now.
Shannon, Bryce Miller is off to such a fantastic start this season, and we've heard some of the best baseball analysts out there say that, you know, he's on the level of Kirby and Gilbert. Has the start to his season maybe made you kind of rethink what he could be as a Major League Baseball pitcher, just maybe thinking that maybe this guy has ace-level potential in him?
No, because I had him up there to start with. You have to give these guys time to develop. It's not usually going to happen right when they first come up. And in some ways, he reminds me a lot of Logan Gilbert when he first came up and to when he was in the minors. Logan was in the minors and on our radar for a lot longer than Bryce Miller was. And so we knew a lot more about him. And the question always was, when they first got him, well, what's his ceiling going to be? And then that turned into, what's his floor going to be? Because I think there was some sort of evaluation that was made in the game that he's good, he's probably not an ace. And all Logan Gilbert has done, and what they didn't know and what they didn't have information about 4 years, 3 years ago when they were saying that, were the intangibles and things that we started to see with him. And the intangible with him is he is a relentless worker, and he is smart about his work. And he also has shown that ability to come up with something to make himself better every year. He didn't come up and just try to rely on what he had, and he's different now than he was when he came up. He was kind of fastball with a big, good curveball, and that was kind of his calling card. No, we're going to add a splitter. We're going to add a cutter. We're going to use a slider in a different way. We're going to do all of that. There are going to be games where if I've got my best fastball, I can go out there and throw it 70%. There are going to be other games where maybe I'll throw my slider more. I'll throw something else more. And I see a lot of that in Bryce Miller, who is still a few years behind where Logan Gilbert was. He's got a special fastball. He's got that plus-plus right there. But he came up, and he had a whole array of different sliders that he wanted to throw. And he very quickly was able to, you know, recognize what was going to work, what wasn't going to work, and what he needed to do to, you know, kind of overcome some obstacles, primarily the left-handers. That's one thing to see it, and it's another thing to do it, and he's done it at a very young state of the game. But I did think that because of the fastball and the stuff that he had in the secondaries, he had very good potential. And again, when we got him in front of us, there were the intangibles and how smart he was and how he worked, and all of a sudden he's raising not just the floor but also the ceiling of what he could be. I don't want to get too carried away. It still is very early with him, but it reminds me a lot of what we saw in Logan, and that you thought that you knew him, but you didn't until you really kind of got him in front of you, saw how he worked, saw how he processed, and then saw his ability to make changes and to execute those changes.
Hey, Shannon, you are in and around this clubhouse. You're in the dugout before and after games. You know these players. You know the skip. You know the coaches. And you hear a lot. And so I'm hoping to lean on some of that, because I'm curious about whether there's been anything going on behind the scenes that's helped supported a turnaround that has nothing to do with play. And what I mean by that is, when this team was like 6-10 or whatever, everyone was saying Service is the worst, get rid of Scott Service, he's horrible, which is natural. Any fan of a losing team will say fire the coach immediately. Is this just a team that's, they've had good pitching and they've turned it around? Or is there something that you've seen or felt around this clubhouse where Scott Service has done some really good work as a manager?
Well, the first thing he has to do is tune all of that out, not just for himself, but for the whole team. You know, you don't want any panic, and you're not going to get that from him. So he gave them a lot of trust in the length of time that he has been giving them and continues to give them, although there have been a lot of changes that have been made offensively. There was no panic with the coaching staff and with the manager when the starters out of the gates just stumbled. You know, and I do think there was a little bit of shock around that, and perhaps that had a little impact on what you saw on the entire team. But they got that turned around quickly, and that was important. I think if you watch him with the relievers, with Andres Munoz in particular, we kind of it's something that's kind of gone a little bit overlooked. But what he's doing right now, what they're asking him to do, is kind of a tough thing for a young pitcher. He all of a sudden, it's all on his shoulders, where there were three last year that could shut things down. I'm not just talking about the end of the game. I'm talking about the most critical situations in ball games. And as we saw, you know, we went to him in the 5-out finish the other day. That's a lot. It's him, and he knows it. And Scott has really had a lot of conversations with Andres and tried to take that pressure out, but trying to get him to the right mindset to do that. And I think that that's kind of one of the quiet things that you haven't seen and that really hasn't been acknowledged, is it's not an automatic thing in that, okay, well, you're our best arm, so you're now the closer and you're going to pitch in every leverage situation. It's kind of tough when there were three of them last year and now there's one, and you have a young guy that's going to put a lot on his shoulders. And that is something where a lot of conversations come into play, and a lot of trust, and a lot of, you know, trying to instill confidence. Not that it isn't there already, but ensuring that is real. And I think that's one area where you see it. And the last would be understanding how difficult it is to be a hitter, and also understanding that perhaps, you know, sometimes you bite off more than you can chew. The offensive plans that they had for this team that looked so great in spring training and very well could turn out in the middle of the season have not translated. And I think in some parts have proven to be a little bit too much. And to that end, Scott Servais and Brant Brown have both admitted we need to take a step back. They haven't been stubborn to their plan. They still believe in it as much as they have, but sometimes you have to simplify a little bit. And I think they were actually pretty quick to transition to that rather than dig in and be stubborn about it. And that's putting those hitters first and what they're going through first, and having good eyes and seeing what the situation. We haven't seen the results from that yet. I think we did see when they first simplified, I do think we did see a little bit of a spike in things looking a little bit better. The strikeout rates coming down a little bit, kind of gone up over the last week, 10 days again. But they're hanging in there with the hitters and doing absolutely everything that they can, and not just saying, hey, this is how it's going to work. You have to do it.
Shannon, Mitch Haniger got off to a really solid start to the season in early April, had his batting average around 300. But ever since that Texas series, he's been slumping a bit. What have you made of his workload to start this season? Because a lot of conversation in the offseason was kind of like, oh, if you can get, you know, 100-plus games out of Mitch, you're golden. But I think he's only had two full days off to this point in the year. What do you think the Mariners need to do to kind of awaken that bat in Mitch again?
Well, the first thing with Mitch is he's streaky. He is always streaky. He always will be streaky. So you have to recognize when it is just, you know, one of his kind of downward trends, and kind of let it be and let him work through that. Not that a day off or a DH day is going to throw that all into chaos. But, you know, I do think you do get to the point where, okay, you know, when I just said you don't want to get greedy, you know, with what you're doing at third base, you probably shouldn't try and get too greedy with what you've got in right field either. And it's really hard to take Mitch out of any lineup, particularly when you are struggling. But I do think you have to take into consideration how many games he's played, where he is in recovery, and how he is bouncing back from games, and also that this is Mitch Haniger and that he also puts a lot on himself. And sometimes you do need to give somebody a mental day, even though some players are just incapable of doing it. That might not do anything, but, you know, they monitor recovery. They are all over that. And I think that, you know, if the struggle continues, I think that you do have to look at taking a little bit off of him in that regard. And whether that is a DH day or whether that is you know, a full off day remains to be seen, but he has been playing a lot. He is struggling right now, and perhaps you do look at pulling back a little bit.
She is Mariners insider Shannon Dreyer. Shannon, thanks so much for joining us from Houston. We appreciate it.
Thanks, Shannon.
You got it. Anytime, guys.
See ya. Two things, Curtis.
Yes.
First of all, I feel bad that we were not more concerned about Shannon potentially dealing with some flooding out in Houston. I had no idea, and it's dangerous. I was just looking it up. It's serious.
Their stadium has a roof, so when the Mariners play a team that is in a domed stadium,
you just don't care.
I don't care about the weather.
But I will say this.
But I do feel bad.
I know why Brock and Salk asked about it.
Why is that?
Because I think this is a fundamental truth. When you turn 30, you start caring about like home improvement, vacuums, you know what I mean? Just like random stuff that you didn't care about before. You start showing up at your friends' houses looking at like the paneling.
Uh-huh.
And like, that's a nice countertop right
there. I'm 28 right now, so
yeah,
I'm taking
get
notes
ready
as we
for
speak.
It. Yeah, get ready for it.
Yeah.
When you turn 40, you just care about weather.
It's true.
Like, I really do think when you hit 40, that weather channel is a preset.
The people who I know that care the most about the weather are my dad and my mother-in-law. And
yeah,
they both will watch the Weather Channel just to watch it.
I have spent so much money on gifts for my stepdad, who's 81. He has never loved a gift more than, A, we got him a bench where squirrels can sit and eat. And the second one was like a thermostat, like a weather kind of tracker thingy. I don't even know because I'm not 40. I don't know enough about it yet. I simply am not part of that world.
My mother-in-law.
But that's why Brock and Salk were asking. I guarantee you they love the Weather Channel. I would bet you anything.
Oh, definitely.
They love weather.
My mother-in-law has this digital clock in her kitchen that also has like the weather on it and like the barometric pressure in the air. It is one of the most,
I'm telling you,
like high-tech clocks I've ever seen. And I respect her love of weather.
I wonder what happens when you turn 50 and then 60. Every decade has to bring one new quirk. That's the rule.
You bring up like home improvement stuff like once you get like 30 and 40.
Yeah.
I remember as a teenager, anytime I'd catch like my mom or my sister's watching HGTV, I'd be like, this is boring. Change
get
the channel.
Out of here.
There's a game on. Let's do something about it. But now I find myself watching like Chip and Joanna with my wife and be like, oh, we should try that.
There's
like,
just things you care about. Once you hit 30,
like
just
the other day, I was
about.
Telling you and Bump how we installed lights underneath our cabinets that are motion censored.
That's what I'm saying.
I was like, yo, guys, this is a game changer.
When I was 20 and in college, we found a couch on the street that was one of the couches in our living room. Do you think 30-year-old me would touch that couch? Absolutely not.
That thing's riddled with disease.
Never, never in a million years would I touch that couch. Like, you just change. All of a sudden, you're talking about installing lighting under your countertops or under your cabinets. The second thing I want to say that's more important.
Yeah.
A really cool stat from The Athletic says, quote, only four teams awoke, this was yesterday, with a higher chase rate than Houston's 30.2% clip. With runners in scoring position, it rose to 31.4%, providing an explanation for the most mind-numbing statistic of the Astros' awful start. This is why I bring it up. There's a lot of nuance to both of these teams. I think we're painting them as, oh, Houston's offense is absolutely amazing and the pitching is horrible. Meanwhile, Seattle's offense is horrible and the pitching is amazing. And there's actually a very interesting nuanced stats that make that an oversimplification for both teams. One of them is that, well, the starter Houston has on the mound tonight has had a no-hitter this year and has an ERA better than, I'm pretty sure, George Kirby and like any other Mariners star. He's really good this year. And kind of a cool story as a 30-year-old who had like eight starts prior to his no-hitter. But also, while this Houston offense is amazing and is putting up good stats in terms of just like a slash line, they are chasing and they are not great with situational baseball.
Right.
So just two things to keep in mind.
Yeah, I'm looking at Jose Altuve's splits right now, and he kind of falls in line with their struggles with runners in scoring position. With no men on base this season, Jose Altuve has seven solo home runs and is hitting .389 with an .1150 OPS. With runners in scoring position, he is batting .191 with a .499 OPS. He has four hits in 21 at-bats. Yeah, he
is
been,
Altuve?
This is Jose Altuve.
God.
And on the season, he's batting like .350.
Right.
So,
he's amazing on the season.
Exactly. So him with runners in scoring position, he has not been good.
I want to know how many of their home runs have been solo shots. I mean, you don't have that stat in front of you, but now I'm curious.
I don't have it in front of me, but like Yordan Alvarez, same thing. 172 with runners in scoring position. He has three home runs with men on base this season. He has eight total this year, but yeah, with runners in scoring position and men on, his numbers have dropped significantly compared to just with nobody on base. That explains a lot. And it also kind of makes me worried because it's like, well, eventually those numbers are going to have to improve.
Yeah.
Like, it can't get any worse than what it is right now for Houston. Hopefully they don't in this series. But that's why, even though they are 11 and 20 and are what, 6.5 games behind you in the AL West race on May 3rd, you're still going to have to take this series and treat it, you know, with the respect that it deserves.
Yeah.
Because even though these guys have struggled with runners on base and have struggled out of the bullpen, like, you can still kind of see how this team can turn it around. And that's a scary proposition.
If you were to apply the same logic I did, which is like, hey, Houston isn't as simple as horrible pitching, great offense. They struggle with situational hitting, and they actually have a few great starters, one of whom we're going to see this weekend. If you were to apply that same kind of, like, it's more complicated than you think approach to Seattle,
mm-hmm.
how would you look at both the pitching and offense as being like, this offense can be better than you think? And I don't even know if the pitching has flaws, but, like, what kind of nuanced lens would you use on the Mariners right now if you were in Houston?
I would definitely.
So, like, if you're in Houston, you're thinking, great, our starting pitchers have a chance to get right against a horrible offense.
Right. But also, it's kind of like, well, the Mariners offense can't get any worse than what it is right now. And guys like Julio continue to get better as the year progresses. I was looking at Julio's month-by-month splits throughout his career. April is the worst month that he has, and I don't think that's a surprise to anybody as his rookie season.
April is a horrible month for a lot of us.
It's a great month for Wyatt and I.
I know.
It's a wonderful
month.
Your
nose's birthday. I'm just saying. Look, I'm not my best in April.
But, you know, in his rookie season, he didn't hit a home run in the month of April. Last year, he had a couple, and this year just had the one. But as Julio continues on each month, his OPS climbs pretty significantly as it goes. I think his OPS in his career in the month of May is around 800. And then second half of the season, like July, August, September, August is his best month by far. His OPS is over 900.
Last August,
he was in God mode. I've never seen a guy that
locked in. No one has ever seen anyone that
locked in. Maurice Jones-Drew against the Huskies.
But every day, he was setting records we have not seen since 1901. Anyone remember 1901? Of course you don't.
Exactly. Every name that was mentioned next to Julio was
that guy's
a guy
dead.
Like Big Pants McGee, you know?
Yeah.
Like what kind of nickname is that?
Yeah, it's like if you're not using his government name, he definitely played in the early 1900s. It's just, his name is
Eight Finger Davis.
Shoes,
yeah.
Two Shoes. I was the Two Shoes LeBron. You know, Two Shoes LeBron.
Why is Eight Finger Davis nicknamed Eight Fingers? Well, he only has eight fingers.
Yeah. We don't like to complicate things around here. I talked about what changes when you turn 30. Someone said, why are Costco and Lowe's so fun? I should throw in
For
home
real.
Improvement stores. I'll spend an hour in Home Depot.
Yeah.
I don't need a sink. I'll look at the sinks.
One of my favorite aisles to walk down in any store is the lighting fixtures at a Home Depot or a Lowe's or something
like
that.
I love the kitchen sections.
It's kinda like, wow, it's so bright in here.
I'm just saying, life changes.
Yeah.
I'm curious to know for people who are, I know this isn't sports, but I've got 30 seconds. For people who like turn 50, what changed? And then turn 60, what changed?
Oh, man.
And then 70. You know what I mean? Like just where you're like, you know what? Suddenly I cared more about this and stopped caring about this. But yeah, anyways, that's why Brock and Salk asked about weather.
Because they're watched.
Oh, God. Taking a look around the NFL next. Don't go anywhere.
Check out the Box Yard across from T-Mobile Park featuring Hatback Bar and Grill, Steelheads Alley, and Victory Hall. The Box Yard is Soto's premier pre- and post-game destination with delicious bites and brews. For more info, visit mariners.com/boxyard.
You're free now. Free to stream beyond your wildest dreams. Free to be everything you imagine, and then some. That's how it feels to have Quantum Fiber. Your world unleashed. Learn more at quantumfiber.com. Limited availability. Service in select locations only.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Bumpin' Stacy.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On Seattle Sports.
Here are your hosts, Michael Bumpus and Stacy Ross.
Taking a look around the NFL, and we are going to start with the Steelers. Steelers running back Jaylen Warren shared a very interesting detail about who his team might use in the kick return game this season. Take a listen.
Our special teams coordinator was talking about Justin Fields being back there.
What? We're like, hold on.
Whoa, you breaking news already?
We looked at him like, Justin Fields about to be back there?
My guess is he was maybe saying, like, I mean, anyone could, you know what I mean? Like, anyone could go back there. We just got to find the best athlete, the fastest. I can't think that he sincerely said, yeah, we're going to bid Justin back there.
Yeah, I mean, Justin Fields is very dangerous in the open field. He is a very fast guy.
He also plays the most important position on your team behind a quarterback who you may not fall in love with early. Russell Wilson also is on a redemption tour here.
Yeah, exactly. You're going to need Justin Fields as healthy as possible throughout this course of the season because, like you said, Stacey, I don't know if Russell Wilson makes it through a full 17-game schedule. He's dealt with injuries the last couple of seasons. Also, what kind of quarterback is Russell Wilson right now?
It's so weird how we've gotten to this point because I was just about to say Russell Wilson and injuries, and then like my old Seahawks self flashed in and was like, no, Russell Wilson doesn't miss games. But no, that's actually not true. He's dealt with injuries late. So that is something the Steelers
have missed. He's probably, what, like 5 or 6 games over the last couple seasons, in addition to the 3 that he missed his final year in Seattle.
Yeah.
Russ has been banged up. And I mean, I would put Fields as the best backup quarterback in the NFL. I don't think that's a hyperbolic thing to say.
Well, or you could be in Seattle and
that's
think
true,
it's Sam Howell. Now, wait a minute.
You could. The CX probably had an opportunity to acquire Fields because I think that trade happened. Was it after the Howell trade?
It was when we all thought Justin Fields would maybe come here, and there was another quarterback we were looking at as well, and then they ended up trading for Sam Howell, and it was a conversation we had was, why Howell over Fields? You know, like, what did you see there? Not in a bad way, just like, let's compare and contrast these two quarterbacks who were presumably both available. Point is, Justin Fields isn't going back there to return kicks. That's not happening. Odell Beckham Jr. has a new home. The well-traveled receiver will be joining the Dolphins on a one-year deal. He played in 14 games for the Ravens last season, coming off the 2022 season, which he sat out entirely. As a reminder, he tore his ACL. Was that in the Super Bowl?
Yes.
Yeah, so he missed the entire year after that. He is entering it not just an interesting phase of his career, but an interesting wide receiver room. There's zero pressure whatsoever. They've got Jaylen Waddle and Tyreek Hill.
Yeah, he's not going to be asked to have 100-plus targets. He's not going to be asked to get over 1,000 yards. He's not that receiver anymore, especially considering the injuries that he has sustained over the last probably 3 or 4 years. I mean, he was on a Hall of Fame trajectory to start his career. He had 5 of his first 6 seasons over 1,000 yards. And the 1 year that he didn't go over 1,000 yards is when he missed most of it in 2017. But unfortunately, injuries have kind of zapped him of who he was in a Giants uniform.
I think that he was an amazing receiver in a Giants uniform. How much of his career has been made based on one catch?
I still think outside of that catch, he was pretty phenomenal.
Absolutely. But I mean, that is one of... considering the hype that's been around him, and he just had a natural it factor and celebrity, and he was, you know what I mean? Like
he had that aura.
So it kind of lent itself to that. But like that catch also, I think, made a big part of his career.
Yes.
He was amazing outside of that. But in terms of like iconic catches or culturally impactful catches, that's a huge one.
Yes. That one will be on every NFL highlight reel till the sun burns out.
That's what I'm, and imagine how many cool catches we've seen, how many cool plays, cool throws, And that one stands out.
And every catch after that gets compared to it,
too. Yeah,
I think Justin Jefferson.
If anyone tries to do any, like, leaning back and grabbing, it's like, oh, he's on his Odell.
Yeah, Justin Jefferson had that crazy catch against the Bills this last season or the season prior in that huge comeback win they had. And people were like, oh, that was a phenomenal catch.
But
it's no OBJ.
It's the worst. Well, speaking of the Bills, they're bringing in veteran wide receiver Chase Claypool on a one-year deal. Claypool spent 2023 with the Bears and Dolphins in 12 games. He only had 8 receptions. He's also had an interesting career trajectory, Curtis.
Yeah, he had a really – he kind of burst onto the scene his rookie season. I think he had like a 200-yard game at one point.
Well, he was behind some drama with AB in Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
Him doing anything, but him, his star shining brighter.
Right, and – Claypool has had just a weird, weird career in that got off to such a great start in Pittsburgh, a place where, like, wide receivers are, they grow on trees there. Like, when was the last time the Steelers didn't have a phenomenal receiver? I can't think of a time. The problem is that with those phenomenal receivers comes a lot of volatility with those guys.
We can say because Bump's not here.
Exactly.
Look, receivers can get a little crazy.
They are divas. I'm telling you. Antonio Brown is on that list of diva receivers, obviously. George Pickens has kind of been that guy to start his career, too, in Pittsburgh. That's why he slipped to the second round for them. I do think it's interesting, though. The Steelers' former receivers coach is the Seahawks' receivers coach now.
I almost went backwards. I said Sanjay Lau, who used to be the Seahawks wide receiver coach.
Yeah, I'm blanking on the name. Frisman Jackson, that's who. He was with Pittsburgh for 2 years, 2022 and 2023. So now he is the Seahawks receivers coach. So I did find it interesting because Claypool did visit Seattle earlier this offseason. I think it's probably just the familiarity he has with Jackson. Mm-hmm. But yeah, he's going to Buffalo. Buffalo, a team in desperate need of receiver help, too. Because no Stephon Diggs anymore. They bring in Keon Coleman. No Gabe Davis. He's in Jacksonville.
I keep forgetting Gabe Davis is out, too. Yeah. Not only that, but how impactful Gabe Davis could be. He was very underrated there.
I feel like Buffalo's receiver group this season could end up being a lot like what Kansas City's was a year ago. Where
if you have the quarterback play to offset it.
Right.
And the defensive play to offset it.
Then maybe it won't. Maybe it won't show itself to be a problem, but... Yeah, the Bills are in a weird spot, a very weird spot.
The Rams are not in a weird spot. They are in an interesting spot, though. Life without Aaron Donald is going to look different. Rams GM Les Snead told Rich Eisen that even though Aaron Donald is retired, Snead would probably still reach out to him about a return at the end of the year if LA has a shot at making the playoffs. Look, I don't want this to happen, but the NFL and reality TV fan in me would kind of like to see a team that, like, fights back, gets into this cool spot where they're trying to make the playoffs, and then they call this defensive star that's been, well, Aaron Donald probably isn't someone to sit on the couch, but sitting on the couch brings him in. It's like, who am I totally blanking on? Safety.
Eric Weddle.
Eric Weddle, thank you, who came in, was wearing the green dot, and, like,
in
was hugely, hugely impactful.
I think he hadn't played in like 4 years.
Yeah, I don't want the Rams to succeed because it comes at the expense of the Seahawks, but it's kind of a cool story.
Yeah, I mean, in the football fan in me would love to see Aaron Donald continue playing because I still think he's got, physically, I think he's got a lot left in the tank, but he talked about it on, it was some podcast where he was like, yeah, I just don't need this anymore. Like,
I mean,
don't...
you've already accomplished so much.
Right. But if the Rams probably give him that call, he's got to answer, right? I mean, he's the greatest player in franchise history. I don't think that's a stretch to say.
For the Rams?
Yeah.
They've had some great players. But
true, like Kurt Warner, Marshall Faulk.
Most awarded, for sure. And I would consider making him the best. I wonder if you get to a point as a person, and in this case it would be as a player for Aaron Donald, where every single year you're a first-team All-Pro. You've been to a Super Bowl. You went to another and won a ring. I wonder if there's a point where you're just done accomplishing things and something switches in your brain where you go, I need a challenge. And, like, I need something different and I need something else. Meanwhile, for other players, they'll play until their legs don't work anymore.
Right.
Until they literally have to be cut from like a team and can't work with another team. And I don't think that means there's not competitive fire with Aaron Donald, but I do think psychologically there's something with people where we need a challenge and we need something to push us.
Yeah, I do commend Aaron Donald for going out on his own terms, because the smallest handful of players in the NFL get to announce their retirement and get to go out when they are ready, not when the league tells them we don't want you anymore. That is one of the harshest realities of the NFL, is that like there are hardly any NFL players that get to say, all right, I'm hanging it up.
Yeah,
like,
on their own
terms. I don't want to go out and play anymore. I would say 99.99999% of players get told we don't need you anymore.
Yeah. From the Mac and Jack's text line. You guys ever heard of Eric Dickerson, LOL?
How many rings he got?
I'm just saying, there are a lot of amazing players to choose from. You can make a case. You can make the case for Aaron Donald being the best ever.
Yes.
He certainly has the most accolades. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, and I mean, there are probably some listeners who were around in the 60s and 70s who are going to be like, oh, Deacon Jones and whatnot, but like, Aaron Donald, 8-time first-team All-Pro, 10-time Pro Bowler, 3-time NFL Defensive Player of the Year, Super Bowl champion, Rookie of the Year, All-Decade Team. Like, this guy accomplished everything there is to accomplish.
I mean, Eric Dickerson, like, also an amazing all-time player. But
is he even the best running back in Rams franchise history? Marshall Faulk, you can make the case.
Curtis, now you're getting wild.
I'm just saying. Just saying, 206.
All right, quick. If I ask you guys to think of three teams that you are most interested in this offseason in the NFL, none of them can be the Seahawks. Just think of three teams, not including Seattle, where if you could wave a magic wand, you'd be like, what's going to happen with them? I'm kind of curious. How many of those teams are in the NFC? I think the conference might be coming back. Don't go anywhere.
You're free now. Free to stream beyond your wildest dreams. Free to be everything you imagine, and then some. That's how it feels to have Quantum Fiber. Your world unleashed. Learn more at quantumfiber.com. Limited availability. Service in select locations only.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Two young fathers are shot to death outside an iconic Utah restaurant.
I said, your dad has been hurt really bad.
The grief was disorienting for those left behind, until one choice changed everything.
I just remember writing this letter, and it wasn't me writing it.
Can a personal decision shape generations?
We're all falling for this guy's trick.
I'm Amy Donaldson. Season 2 of The Letter, Ripple Effect, is available now. Follow us at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
When you're running the hurry up and don't have time for your favorite Seattle sports show, listen to the podcast on demand.
How about that? Unbelievable.
What a thought.
Every hour, every interview, every look behind the scenes.
It's Geno Smith.
Competition brings out the best in everybody.
If I were a Seahawk fan who wasn't listening to that, I would have to hear that.
Find us on seattlesports.com, the Seattle Sports app, or wherever you get podcasts.
Oh, it's fun.
It changes everything.
Never miss a minute of Seattle Sports, your home for the Seahawks and Mariners.
You're listening to Bumpus and Stacy
on Seattle Sports.
Here are your hosts, Michael Bumpus and Stacy Rost.
What three teams outside of the Seahawks are you most interested in this offseason, most fascinated by? Isaac and Everett, one listener texted in saying Atlanta, obviously, what are they going to do with Cousins if he has a bad game? Like, is there going to be a quarterback controversy? Denver, just because they're such a dumpster fire, Peyton finally got rid of Russ. So let's see what this visor clown has. And Steelers, Justin Fields may return punts. What? Such an interesting story there with two starting quarterbacks. Extra credit Chargers because Harbaugh. Great answers.
Yes.
Amazing answers. Mine happened to be in the NFC, and because mine are in the NFC, it lent itself to me wondering if this conference, which was weakened last year, and I would argue the year prior, mm-hmm. is going to see an influx of new talent and new storylines. So, Curtis, if I were to ask you, name me three teams outside of the Seahawks you're most interested in their offseason. Who you got?
Most interested, I'm going to start with the team that had the number one pick in the draft, the Chicago Bears. And you bring in Caleb Williams, which I think would have been a big deal for any organization. But then you not only have him there, you trade for Keenan Allen, who is one of the most accomplished receivers currently in the NFL. You then use a top 10 pick on Roma Dunze. You've got, DJ Moore already there. Mm-hmm. Like, this Bears team, which has historically been known as, one of the worst teams for passing, has maybe the most talented quarterback they've ever had and definitely the best wide receiver core they've ever had. That makes them very intriguing to me. I wonder how they're going to fit in that NFC North, which is a very competitive division with Detroit coming off an NFC title game appearance. Green Bay looking like they're improving with Jordan Love. They've added Josh Jacobs. And Minnesota is kind of that wild card where, you don't know what they're going to be with J.J. McCarthy as their quarterback. But I think Chicago is a team that has really captured my attention this offseason. Atlanta, I'm right there with Isaac and Everett. I think they have the talent to win the NFC South. But that quarterback situation mm-hmm. just seems very, very volatile. The other team, the third team that I have zeroed in on this offseason is Houston. They have, I think, been the darlings of this offseason. You add Stephon Diggs to a team that has already gotten great wide receiver play out of Nico Collins. We don't know what Tank Dell's status is going to be recovering from that shooting he was involved in, earlier this week. Mm-hmm. But you got Stephon Diggs, you got CJ Stroud going into year two, Will Anderson going into year two. That Texans team. So the ESPN.com writer Zach Lowe for their NBA coverage, he does NBA League Pass power rankings, like teams he would tune in for, not necessarily the best teams. Anytime Houston is on a primetime game this season, I am going to be transfixed because I want to see what that yes. offense looks like.
Yeah,
those
I
are my
too.
Three teams, the Bears, the Falcons, and the Texans.
I had the Bears for my top one. I'm going to throw in as well the Commanders. The Commanders, much like the Bears, are a team with, if you were to just tell me the moves and not show me the logo of the team who made them, I'd be like, well, that's very interesting. What's going to happen here?
That does...
Once you show me the logo, I naturally, for the Commanders, start to go, this isn't going to work. This free agent they sign is going to be a bust. This draft pick just isn't going to have the opportunities. But we're talking about a new ownership group, a new coaching staff, presumably a new culture in Washington, and we don't quite know what all of that looks like together because while the ownership group has already taken over, this will be Dan Quinn's first year with Washington.
Mm-hmm.
And I think people saw Dan Quinn as, he failed with Atlanta. And there were a lot of problems in Atlanta that weren't Dan Quinn's fault. But, might that not work out? Obviously, he had that bad final showing for Dallas's defense. But he also had, consecutive seasons of, top five defenses there in Dallas. I think people overlooked him as a candidate, and I think he could be really, really good in Washington. They had an amazing free agency class, bringing in Austin Eckler. Obviously, they brought in Bobby Wagner. They signed some guys that I thought that the Seahawks would be going after, including adding to the trenches. And then in the draft, they might have gotten their quarterback of the future. I mean, we asked Maurice Jones-Drew, if you could wave a magic wand and you could go 5 years into the future and pick any of these six quarterbacks taken in the top 12 and you can see what their future looks like, he chose Jaden Daniels.
Yeah, I think Daniels at his very best could really, open some eyes and make Washington a competitive ball club in that NFC East division. Mm-hmm. I like your point about Dan Quinn calling him overlooked. I did not want him in Seattle because I felt like he may have been a little too similar to Pete Carroll in terms of philosophies. That's not to say that he is a bad head coach. I think he can be great elsewhere. I just think the Seahawks needed different messaging.
I think
they needed something new
1,000%
from what they had over the last 14 years, and I felt like Dan Quinn may have been too similar to what Pete Carroll was. I think he can have success in Washington. They bring over, what, Adam Peters, who was assistant GM with the 49ers for a number of years. Obviously, the 49ers have done a ton of winning recently. I think that was a good move. So, yeah, Washington is a team in that NFC East. I don't know. I don't necessarily think they're going to go from, like, worst to first this season.
No, but they have some nice defensive pieces they've added. Frankie Louvu was the top linebacker available, and they went after him. You're right, though. Like, there are a lot of new pieces with that front office to think of. The point of me doing all of this is last year, what did we keep saying all offseason, Curtis?
It was the AFC.
Oh, the AFC.
Look at all these quarterbacks.
That's where all the great quarterbacks are. And the NFC, like, oh, it might be easier to get a top seed because some of these teams are without quarterbacks. They're weakened. They're not so great. Well, God, we're a year removed. The Rams were better than we thought they'd be. You've got what the heck is his name? Jordan Love,
Who's
better than we thought he'd be in Green Bay. You have the Bears who could be improved, Washington who could be improved. Let's see if the Eagles can get their stuff together. They had a good offseason in terms of free agency, a really good draft. There are teams in the Eagles were already great, but there are teams in the NFC that you didn't really think of as like factors standing in the Seahawks' way last year. And it might be a more competitive conference this year. I'm curious to see if that happens.
Yeah, and you kind of wonder, too, about what's going on in San Francisco with their wide receiver situation. I saw Mike Silver write a column right after the draft being like, this is kind of their last go-around with this core group of guys. That's kind of why they drafted Ricky Pearsall in the first round, because they probably don't see a future with both Brandon Ayuk and Debo Samuel as that wide receiver tandem. So you kind of wonder, like, is San Francisco maybe going to come back to the pack a little bit, which then opens things up for everybody in the NFC.
All right. Well, speaking of the NFC, we're going to take a look around the rest of the NFL and reflect on the 2024 NFL draft with NFL.com's Greg Rosenthal coming up next.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.